If you're running a business right now, you're playing a game where the rules keep changing. Trade tensions, economic uncertainty, culture wars, the world is rapidly changing around us. And companies, especially independent and local businesses, are having to adapt faster than ever. That's why Mission Critical is evolving. We're diving deep with the founders, CEOs, and entrepreneurs who are navigating this chaos in real time. The ones making the tough calls, pushing through unpredictability, and proving that resilience isn't just a buzzword, it's a survival skill. How do you scale in an economy that feels like it's on shaky ground? What happens when US policy shifts send shockwaves through Canadian industries? And in a world where diversity, healthcare, and economic resilience are becoming battlegrounds, how do businesses double down instead of backing down? These are the real conversations that matter to business leaders right now. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. What does leadership look like when it's rooted in relationship instead of hierarchy? When it's guided by ancestral teachings rather than corporate titles? And when it centers healing as the path forward? In this episode of Mission Critical, I'm joined by Shayla Stonechild, a storyteller, activist, and the founder of the Matriarch Movement. Through her work in media, wellness, and advocacy, Shayla is helping to reimagine what leadership can look like through an Indigenous lens, one that is communal, spiritual, and deeply matriarchal. We explore how digital spaces can carry the legacy of oral traditions into a new generation, how Indigenous storytelling is shaped by land, language, and lineage, and why true leadership isn't about spotlight, it's about responsibility. Shayla also shares her vision for Indigenous voices to not only be seen and heard, but to be centered, celebrated, and followed. This is a conversation about reclaiming identity, honoring sacred knowledge, and building new systems that reflect old truths. And at its heart, it's about what happens when you lead not with ego, but with purpose. This is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Hi, Shayla. How is your day going today?
Hello, Danse. Day is going really well. I'm in Jordan River currently, and it's beautiful outside, and it's very sunny, so I can't complain.
So I'm excited for our chat today. I wanted to start off by asking, what do you think is the most interesting thing that's happening in terms of, or when it comes to Indigenous storytelling and dialogue through the lens of like content creation, social media, and just the overall digital space in general?
One thing that I think is really cool that's happening in terms of Indigenous storytelling online is we are seeing Indigenous people from across the globe share their truth and share their stories and also just really show who they are on every level. You can find Indigenous creators that are very funny, that are literally super hilarious, and they have like slang and stuff that we would only know as Indigenous people. So to see that kind of go viral and create its own impact in a different way has been cool. And also obviously to see creators like Kwana Chasing Horse, who is an Indigenous model, stand up and advocate for land sovereignty and rights and her voice be heard in spaces like the Met and also Vogue. That's been really cool to see, and I think a long time overdue. We've always known that Indigenous people are natural storytellers and we have a gift of sharing our stories, and to see that represented on the online space, I can only imagine what the future is going to look like.
Yeah. And just building on what you just said there, you know, storytelling has always been such a cornerstone of Indigenous culture. How do you see social media as an extension or evolution of that tradition?
I think for me personally, Indigenous storytelling for the podcast, like I facilitate and I run and I host the Matriarch Movement podcast. And for me, I wanted that to be an extension of ceremony and an extension of a sharing circle. And so I treat that online space as if we are sitting together, maybe in ceremony or having a cup of tea or being in a sharing circle. And so it's almost like an innovative way of honoring our traditions, but through a new lens. And so with that, though, comes a lot of responsibility on also knowing what to share and what to hold sacred. But yeah, I think like there's so many different forms that we can take with our storytelling in the online space. And in the same breath, I'm curious how to keep some of the stuff that we have sacred and meaningful to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And what would you say, you know, distinguishes Indigenous storytelling and storytellers in the digital space from other creators or influencers, you know, in like a very unique kind of way that can really only be seen through the lens of, or the point of view of Indigenous creators and voices.
Yeah, for Indigenous storytelling, like a lot of our stories come from the land and they're in connection to the land. Also, a lot of our stories are shaped by our languages and the worldview that our languages hold. I myself am learning Plains Cree, and a lot of the language is relational. So it's when you start to learn your language, it really starts to shift how you perceive. It starts to shift your consciousness. For me, I'm Nehiyaw, and so I start thinking in a Nehiyaw way. And so for Indigenous storytellers, oftentimes we're connecting to the land, we're connecting to our language, and that's shifting how we perceive ourselves in the world. And it also roots us in our identity that's a lot deeper than just, I think, maybe some of the mainstream just ways of storytelling. With that, there's also like protocols, and there's relationships that are integral to the way that you tell the story. And so I think that's what Indigenous creators have, but with that comes a lot of responsibility of knowing who you are and where you come from, and also if you have the right to share the story that you're sharing.
And when you say if you have the right to tell that story, what are you, can you unpack that or talk about that a little bit more? Like who can feel emboldened and empowered to share their stories in that way, and who should focus just more on listening?
Yeah, I think it depends like where you come from and who you're raised with. So for example, if one of my friends, actually she's here right now, Marika, she's Inuk and she's also an influencer. But if she was to share like an Inuit story or like a creation story from her tribe, I wouldn't really have the right to go on and share that in my own way, because it doesn't come from where I come from. It doesn't come from my tribe or my people or my lineage. And I don't know the full extent of the depths of that story. So therefore, it's not my right to share it. And I think oftentimes you are gifted these stories, and sometimes it's just the teachings that you can learn, but it's not really maybe your right to share them. So yeah, it depends on the context, and it depends on your relationship of who's sharing that story and what's your relationship to that person. So if an elder tells me a creation story and he's like, you know, I think you have the right to share this with the people in your nation, and then I'm gifted that, and then I have the right to share that with the nation. But it's also establishes, it's between the relationship between you and that other person.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. You know, some would argue that the algorithm with a lot of these platforms like Instagram or TikTok or whatever it is, doesn't always reward the nuance and depth that, you know, are required in terms of preserving the richness of this kind of storytelling while making them still accessible. I guess my question is, how do you preserve the richness of this storytelling and culture while still making them accessible to these fast-paced platforms, and also the culture that we live in where everything is so bite-sized and everything is so immediate and consumed so quickly? How do you reconcile that with the kind of richness and the nuance that exists within culture and being able to tell that story in a respectful way?
That's a good question, because I'm still figuring that out, and I don't know if there's a definite answer for that. And again, when I host podcasts, for example, we always ensure that there's a relationship kind of prior to the conversation that we're having. So I already know usually the person that I'm talking to on a deeper level. And then so when we record, you know, they have every right to share what they feel comfortable with. But on the aftermath, I'm like, if you want me to go back and edit, or if you don't want to share this with the world, or if you have to go seek counsel from your community on if it was okay for you to share that, you can, then you can go and do that. And so for us, it's more of a collective approach sometimes on the way. It's a collective approach on like the way that we know what to share when it comes to content. But for me, honestly, I'm not posting content to go viral. I'm posting content to create an impact and also to share the voices of maybe some people that haven't had a chance to share their story. And so for me, it's not about viral, like being viral. It's about really about impact. And sometimes it's just like the impact itself is that person feeling heard and feeling seen and feeling valued for once.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of your work often bridges the world of like activism, spirituality, storytelling. When did you first realize your perspective and your voice? Like, when did you first understand that this is how you wanted to channel your voice?
I first kind of saw that happening when so my intention was never to become a content creator. It was never to become an influencer. It was really to share my voice and to share my story and to share the impact that certain things have had on my family. And so for me, I really saw that happen when I took over Jillian Harris's blog. Jillian Harris is like a Canadian well-known influencer. I believe she was on The Bachelorette, and she approached me to write for her blog, do a blog contribution about July 1st and like just sharing an Indigenous recipe, she originally said. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to really write a recipe on for July 1st when I don't really celebrate Canada Day, because what happened to my family, my dad went to residential school. And for me, I was like, you know what? Here's my chance to make an impact and to share something to an audience that I probably wouldn't have access to otherwise. And so there I talked about why I don't celebrate Canada Day on July 1st. And so that went viral. And then I got an interview with eTalk, got interviews with The Social. And I was like, oh, wow, I had no idea the extent your words can reach to even a different audience. And so that was kind of my first intake, and that was like back in 2021. And so things have also shifted a lot more in 2021 to like 2023. Maybe I felt like I was really a lot more political online, and then because you literally will get shadow banned now and your content won't be shown if you're advocating for things now. So I feel like the algorithm in 2021 versus now has changed a lot, which is unfortunate because it really has suppressed some Indigenous voices online. And so.
And are we talking about mostly like Instagram as a platform or
Instagram?
General?
Instagram is my primary one that I post on. So yeah, I would say like Instagram's algorithm has definitely changed, but also like the policies in Canada. I know there was bills going around, like I think it was Bill C-10, where they wanted to start they wanted to make sure like the content that was being approved was like also okay, I'll have to search up, but yeah, like
we'll do some fact checking later and figure it out.
Thank you. I was like, I can't remember it off the top of my head, it was a while ago, but there's actually these created.
Yeah, that has been an unfortunate kind of change in how these platforms operate. Much of your work, you know, centers around Indigenous matriarchy. Who would you say are some of the women or matriarchs who shaped your leadership and worldview?
For me, some of the matriarchs that I'm currently inspired by, always my mom. She's Red River Métis. Her name's Lori Ouellette. She's a social worker, but she also took me around when I was very young to different communities across Alberta, Saskatchewan, Indigenous communities, facilitating through her nonprofit. And so I kind of grew up already facilitating workshops when I was very young. And so my mom showed me the healing that can happen when you're in relationship to other people, and the healing that can happen when you come together. And so my mom had a really big impact. She was also a single mother. And so seeing her resilience and her joy that she still has despite what she's gone through has always been inspiring to me. Also, the women that I surround myself with on a daily basis. One of my best friends is Gira Gladjoe, and she's also an Indigenous woman. Marika, there's so many Indigenous women that are doing like brilliant things. We could be here for literally probably an hour just talking about all the ones that I'm inspired by. And also currently I interviewed attorney, activist, and author Sherry Mitchell, and she wrote a book called Sacred Instructions. And there she speaks from her worldview, an Indigenous worldview, and talks about how we are now in a state where our world is in deep need of healing and a reclamation of Indigenous values and of an Indigenous worldview, and how everyone can start to embody those values. And so I would invite listeners to read that book, Sacred Instructions.
Yeah, yeah. you know, so often when we look at, you know, through a Western lens and talk about leadership within a community, much of that is done through the lens of hierarchy and also like the individual perspective as well. What do you think leadership looks like through a communal, decolonized indigenous point of view?
Yeah, I think leadership for me has never been really about myself or what I've done or who I am. It's really about what I help people remember. And I think when you come from a collective worldview, you care about each other. And so I think leadership looks like the health of your whole community. And when you think about it in that terms, how are we doing really? And how is the leadership currently? Even if you look here in Canada, how is the health of all of us here right now in this country? If you look at leadership in that framework, I think it would show you how much work we still have yet to do.
And yeah, the health is unwell.
Yeah. And also like knowing, I think we're still healing from the pandemic and everything that's happened through that and like being isolated. I know for a while there, I was even scared to even come back physically into community because we spent so much time isolating and we spend so much time on our phones now. So I think the antidote is to come back into community and to come back being in relationship with one another. And we need each other now more than ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of building on that, you know, you often talk about how healing is, you know, is both personal and political. How is wellness for you a form of resistance or reclamation?
Well, when you look at Indigenous women through a mainstream lens, oftentimes we're highlighted in a state of vulnerability or a state of lack or a state of survival. And the statistic, we're always shown the statistics about who we are, and we are more than just numbers. Mm-hmm. We're human beings. And so for me, like healing is political because I feel like the system doesn't want us to thrive. The system thrives on silencing Indigenous women and erasing Indigenous voices. And I think that the opposite of that is reclaiming our connection to our spirit and our power and our voice, because there was a time where we weren't meant to even be alive. My dad went to residential school and they really tried to erase who he was as a person. So on the opposite end for me is like reclaiming that connection to my voice, reclaiming my connection to ceremony, reclaiming my connection to my language, because at one time that wasn't ever allowed here in Canada. And so I think that's why for Indigenous people, healing is political, because they didn't want us to heal. They don't want us to be healthy and they don't want us to thrive. And I think it's changing now a little bit, but we still have a long ways to go.
Yeah, just the act of existing and thriving is an act of resistance and reclaiming your own power there.
Mm-hmm. And like when you do that, you see the corruption of the systems and you see what's happening and you have a better understanding of why things are happening in the way that they are right now currently.
Yeah, yeah. If there is like one teaching or value that you wish more people outside the community understood and could understand better from your work, what would it be? Like, what's the through line for you?
For me, it comes back to this concept within Cree language. Within my language, it's called Wakotwin. And so Wakotwin means kinship, but on a deeper level, it means the responsibility that we have to ourselves, but also to one another. And so this word Wakotwin talks about the interconnectedness of everything and everyone, but on a deeper level, it's asking you, what is your responsibility to everyone? And what do you have to do to ensure that interconnectedness thrives? And how do you ensure that, yes, you may be healthy, but how do you know that your neighbor is also healthy? And so I think what Wakotwin kind of shapes always my work is coming back to that interconnectedness, but on a deeper level, asking myself, what is my responsibility, not only for myself, but for my community and for like the next generation?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Last question, because I want to be respectful of your time too, but what excites you the most about the road ahead, let's say the next 5-10 years? What's your North Star?
For me, it obviously always comes back to wellness. For me, I'm really excited because I don't know if I can mention it on this call, but I just got 2 book deals.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Not one, but 2.
2 book deals, yeah. And so I feel like my North Star is having even my personal story shared on a bigger scale, but also providing some of the teachings and the languages and the concepts that I've shared even here on a bigger scale. And so for the next year, I'll be working on writing my book and then sharing that with the world. And then also there's some exciting things coming up over the next couple months, but my North Star really is first, to ensure the well-being of Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit people, and always helping them find their voice and share their story, and also maybe just even begin their own healing journey, whether that's through yoga or meditation or ceremony. And then on a bigger scale, I think having Indigenous wellness facilitators, knowledge carriers, elders, leaders, their voices helping shift and helping people remember where we came from, and helping people remember their own connection to the earth and to their own healing journeys. Because when you look at the health and wellness industry, you don't really see a lot of Indigenous voices highlighted within it. And so I would love to see Indigenous voices on a global stage and being honored just as much as people from the Western industry.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Shayla, thank you so much for your time and your insight and just our conversation. I loved our chat.
Yeah, thank you so much. Hopefully it all went well.
I would say so.
That's a wrap on this episode of Mission Critical. If today's conversation gave you something to think about, do me a favor. Subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Big ideas are meant to be shared, and the best insights only matter if they're put into action. Until next time, stay sharp, stay curious, and go and make something happen. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical.